Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to West Coast Booksters Podcast. Here is your main event. Your hosts, Kendra and Jess, defend their bookshelf corners in an epic book battle. Let's get ready to ruffle some pages.
You're invited to the midnight dinner tonight, where we discuss the circus of dreams that arrives without warning, the black and white tents that are supposed to pull you in and take your breath away. Unfortunately for Jess, that did not happen.
Fail.
So did you love it or hate it? Spoilers, they are coming. So if you can't pick a side because you haven't read it, you'll definitely throw your support to one of us by the end of this battle. We can begin with one plot, and that's where the game begins. If you've read this book, then you know that there are several perspectives and several different plots going on throughout the book, which is one of the reasons why I think this is one of those books that you read and it's either you love it or you hate it, because there's a lot of flipping back and forth.
Too much flipping.
Yes, to figure out that timeline. Now, I want you to realize that I read this on the Kindle whenever, yeah, Jess's face.
What? How did I? I had the physical book and I had to flip back and forth. And I was like, I still didn't know what was going on.
The book actually made an impression on me. I think it was all the different perspectives and the different plots going on. I'm very attracted to books like this, like Game of Thrones and the movie Crash. I cannot think of another book right now that has different plot lines going through it. No, it's too early for that. It's too early in the morning. We'll start with one plot, which is when the game begins. And that's when Hector and the man in the gray suit decide they want to play a game. And it's basically putting two students against each other. And we don't know the rules to this game until the very, very end of the book, which is so annoying. But at the same time, very intriguing, because you're like, how do you win? The two students they have is Celia, which is Hector's daughter. He's also known as Prospero. I want to say Prospero the Magnificent, but I don't think that's his name. It's just Prospero. And then there's Marco, who is an orphan that the man in the gray suit adopts.
Which had me wondering. I was like, all right, maybe Celia is not actually his daughter. Because why would she? I don't know. The thoughts that went through my head where it's like, really? You just happen to have the perfect child for this? And then the man in gray suit has to run out and find something?
Something.
Sorry, someone.
Well, the whole point was Celia has natural ability and Marco had, well, we don't know what he had, but Marco would be taught, strictly taught through books and...
Oh, that's true. It was like two different modes of magic.
Yes. And one was like an exposed world magician and the other one was studying alone, isolated, which sounds very, very sad.
Right? Especially when she had natural talent and he doesn't.
And then you have another plot line where it is all the people who set up the circus, because the circus is the venue to where these two, which is Celia and Marco, show off all their skills. And we still have no idea what these rules are. We don't know how they win. We don't know what impresses who. It was all very, very mysterious throughout the entire book. So we have Chandrish. I hope that's how you say his name.
Maybe.
And he is the perfect example of an old rich bored man who gets upset over a review because it says dazzling audiences with spectacles that is almost transcendent. And he just looks at that word transcendent and he's like, almost?
Yeah, he got hung up on the almost. It was supposed to be transcendent.
And then you have, I don't even know how to say her name, Padava, I don't know. And she's the one who makes the costumes. You have Lainey and Tara, and I don't really know what they do. I think they just do the marketing for the circus. And then you have Mr. Barris, who is the engineer. All these people, they generally play very small roles, but they're the whole reason how the circus comes together, because of their midnight dinners. And these dinners are just, they sound so delicious.
there was so much focus on the food, and then they started bringing in special entertainment for these things. And I was like, wait, these were actually business meetings. But thankfully, Aaron Morgenstern writes so vividly that I completely forgot that they were kind of like business meetings and was like wrapped up in the delicious food and the lush environment. And she described the amazing outfits that they were wearing. And I was like, okay, wait, what was the point of these midnight dinners? Why are they such a big deal? And everybody wants to be invited to them. There's so much going on that I guess I just lost the train of each of the plots. And then it would flip and I didn't know where in the story I was. And it was like bouncing back and forth.
I could see that because, yeah, you do get wrapped up and then all of a sudden you're somewhere else in the next chapter and you're like, wait a minute. Let me go back and see where I was the last time this person was introduced.
Yeah, major shift and in like huge chunks. So it was like, wait, who is this again? And then you'd get the one or two pages where it's like a little boy. Why is this boy important?
Now that you mentioned Bailey, we also had him, Poppet, and Widget. And those are names for characters in the book. I'm just not saying random words. They're young. Bailey comes in when he's, I think, 7 or 8. And then he grows up. And I think he only really has like 5 or 6 chapters. He's not even in there a whole lot. But he's like an integral part of the book. So he comes back in when he's about 18 and the circus comes around to his town again. A lot of things are happening in his life. His grandmother wants him to go away to college so he can do what he wants to do, focus on his dreams. His dad is like, no, you're going to stay here and take over the farm. And he doesn't really know what he wants, but he does know that he doesn't want to stay with the farm.
Yeah, that's one thing where he doesn't know what he wants, but he knows what he doesn't want. Oh, that sounds like the rest of us in life. Completely indecisive.
So we have Poppet and Widget, who were born on the day the circus opened. So however old the circus is, that's how old they are. But they were also born on different days. So you have one that was born on opening day at like 11:59. And then you have the other twin that was born the next day, which is at like 12:01. And these are not normal kids. Poppet can actually see the future in the stars. And Widget can read a person's past by looking at them, which I thought that was very interesting. I would like that superpower. Here's another plot line that we go through. Celia and Marco, they're opponents, but at the same time, they fall in love. Of course they do, right? It has to happen.
Yeah. And it's not just that they fall in love. They fall in love with each other.
Oh, well, did I forget that part?
Which just complicates things. I'm sure that their teachers were like, no. No fraternizing with the opponent.
Oh, Celia's dad had a few choice words for her. Okay. He was an awful, awful man. Part of her training was him splitting open her fingertips so she could mend them back together.
There's no empathy there. It's like, ooh, you can do that? Let's try this. Oh, now let's try this. Oh, let's twist your arm into a corkscrew. Now you fix it. Look at that. You did it.
It almost makes you wonder if the reason why he put her in this battle was so he wouldn't have to deal with her, because he didn't want her. In the beginning of the book, she shows up in the very first chapter, and we don't find out what happens to her mom until the end of the book, which her mom committed suicide. And it's him. He's the reason why she committed suicide, because she was so in love with her father, and he kind of treated her like a plaything. And then he was like, okay, I'm done with you. And he left, her with a child. And remember, this is in 19-something, way back when that was not okay for women. You bore a child, and you're not married. Gasp. Like, that was a big deal. So it makes you just wonder, because these magicians, the man in the gray suit would probably bop me over the head if he heard me say that, but these magicians seem to live for an extremely long time. I'm just wondering if he was like, oh, what's an easy way to get rid of you? Okay, I know. Let's put you in this battle that you have to die in order to get out of.
Right, because this wasn't their first battle.
They've been doing this for years. Margo gets a job with Chandrish as his assistant, and that's how he gets infiltrated into the circus. Celia has yet to be in there, so she actually goes and auditions for it to be the illusionist in the circus, and that is when the first two actually meet. And the minute Margo sees her act, he knows that's his opponent, and the woman is powerful, and he gets so scared because he's like, how am I going to win against this woman? Now, Celia still doesn't know that he's her opponent. She doesn't find this out until years later. Margo actually has to reveal himself, but the way he keeps an eye on her, because he actually has to stay in London and Celia is traveling with circus, so how he keeps an eye on her is he makes a new friend. And her name is Isabel. She goes and joins the circus as the tarot reader. And she does have a little bit of magic to herself. Like, she can actually read the cards. She can actually see your future. And this is like the very first person he ever has a real relationship with. And it is very sad how it ends. But she spies on Celia for him. Then we have Tsukiko. I think that is how you say her name. I'm pretty sure she's Japanese. She is my favorite character. Does that surprise you?
No.
She was just so mysterious, and she only had your attention for as long as she wanted it. As soon as she was done with you, she'd walk away or you wouldn't notice that she was gone. She was the contortionist, and she had this snake tattoo made of runes and mythology and Chinese characters and astronomy all over her body. I really wish they would have put artwork in this book, because I really wanted to see what the clock looked like, because they had a clock when you first entered the circus. I really wanted to see a picture of this tattoo. And I really wanted to see designs of the clothes.
Yeah, again, because Aaron's description is stunning.
So if you want to find out what the clock looks like, it's on page 69 in the book. It makes me want to buy a cuckoo clock.
And not because she's cuckoo. Kidding.
So the clockmaker is Herr Frederick Thiessen. I'm almost positive I got that right.
It's close enough. It works.
He is important because he is a revoir. I don't know if that's the way to say the word. It's R-E-V-E-U-R. And I'm pretty sure that is French or German or...
I would think French.
I think it's French, but he was German. So I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty sure he was German. But these revoir... I'm sorry. If I'm saying that wrong, that's what you're going to hear throughout the whole podcast.
Right? I'm trying to look up how it... I'm like, where is the pronunciation?
He follows the circus around to the different places it goes. And it turns out that how he gets the location is by Celia, because they start a platonic relationship. Although, who else thought that there was something going on there whenever they started writing back and forth? Because I thought that there was going to be a little love story there, and it was going to be between him and Margo.
Oh, like a triangle?
Yeah. Even though he seemed very old. But that's, I mean, look at Jane Eyre.
The time frame still works. That era, it was older men and younger brides. I mean, that's been going on for a very long time. It wasn't unheard of.
But that's not what happened. And he becomes a figurehead for the people that chase the circus. It makes me think of the people that chase the McRib at McDonald's around the country.
That's a thing?
That's a thing. And they like to wear black coats and then something red. So you can tell that they're one of these people that follow the circus, that they're one of the in crowd.
Right. It was a red scarf or a red flower, hats or feathers, or the lining of their coat, that kind of thing. Something bright red against their black and white outfit.
Well, they wanted to blend, but they didn't want you to think they were part of the circus. So they couldn't just strictly be black and white. Like I said before, Margo could not follow the circus. He had to stay in London. So he needed a way to stay connected to it. And so the bonfire throughout the book is important, because that's how he has his magical pull on it. That's how he keeps his tents going. And when I say tents, I mean the tents that they made to show off their skills. The very first night, he talks about how the bonfire gets started. And this thing stays lit. I think it goes on for 13 years before they start having problems. It never goes out. When they light it, everyone feels this.
Like a surge of power or something.
What they don't know at this time is that their whole lives have completely changed at this point.
They plucked the strings of fate. They felt surging emotion. Their feelings were affected.
What kind of podcast is this?
I'm like, get to the good part.
Page 93, they have it.
I guess the fire, it makes me think of the Olympic torch. It has to be kept burning. And then they take a piece of that fire and run it around and bring it back. And it has to stay lit.
That makes sense. I do notice that the tricks that they have there aren't very different from regular magicians. Reading this the second time around, it's very much the same. The difference is that they just don't need contraptions to do it. They don't need mirrors and smoke. They just are.
Right. And you get that viewpoint. That's when it flips. And there's all that conversation about how they're going to do this and what they want to do and how they want to keep adding to it and all of their like business meetings, I guess, which you don't fully grasp until more towards the end of the story. It flips from like the inner workings to now you're a circus goer and you enter it. And then you're like, oh, well, I'm going to go and pick this tent. And whoa, there's floating clouds. And whoa, there's an ice forest. And whoa, let's go see the illusionist, and it's just amazing.
Yeah, that was another perspective that you got. You actually, or at least it would make you think that you were walking into the circus yourself.
Yeah, which, getting to like perpetually smell that, what is it, the caramel popcorn or just the caramel scent in the air. Everything that you experienced was magical. What you saw, what you touched, what you heard, what you smelled, probably what you tasted.
The chocolate mice, that's the only thing I can remember.
What is with chocolate mice and chocolate frogs in these books these days?
I don't know.
Who wants to eat these things?
It had a tail, though.
No. Just, yeah. Where is, like, give me a chocolate truffle. Give me a bonbon. Why do they have to be mice and frogs?
I don't know. My son is good with churros. One thing I did want to do was ride the carousel that they had in the book. It was griffins and wervins and foxes, and it was all black and white, and it just sounded like an evil carousel, something that I needed to ride.
Oh, I just wanted to go into that cloud forest tent. That one sounded the coolest to me.
Yeah, I would do that too. But the thing was, these creatures were breathing.
Yep, nope, I'm good. Those are deadly creatures.
You don't want to ride on a wervin? It's not like they're going to turn around and bite your head. Well, I guess the wervin could kind of... Like,
uh-huh. They have necks. Long necks.
I'd still ride it.
Kendra would march bravely up to the carousel. I am riding this. And she'd get on and be like, where's the carriage? I want to look at them. I'm kidding.
The cloud tent made me think of that game Mario with those moving clouds and you just jumping all around to and fro in order to pass to the next level, and the next level is the next tent.
Yes. Insert Mario music.
The ice garden was also pretty cool. Everything was made of ice. I've actually been to an ice place here in Vegas. They have one. I can't remember what it's called.
Like an ice sculpture?
No, it's a room all made of ice. Even the like martini glasses or glasses that you drink out of if you buy a drink there is made of ice.
That sounds really cold.
The benches are made of ice. They had ice sculptures in there. What they do is before you go in, they put you in a giant Antarctica jacket. And you go in and then they'll take pictures of you and stuff. Oh, I should post that. I should post our pictures.
That sounds so cold.
It is cold, but it is also very, very cool. But you're only in there for maybe 30 minutes, so.
Yeah, because you can't handle the cold. You can't handle the cold.
It was neat, though, because she's like, oh, I'm going to pick this flower. And she picks it off and it grows back immediately. So I'm just like, how much power and skill does it take to maintain that? Because you know people are going in there picking stuff off.
Right.
So Marco collaborates with Mr. Barris, who's the engineer from the beginning. And they make this one giant tent that has a bunch of rooms that interconnect. And it's kind of like Marco makes one tent and then Celia makes the next one and then he makes the next one. And then you can interconnect kind of like a big jungle gym. He collaborates with him, Mr. Barris, on this because I honestly think at this point he's already in love with Celia. And this is his way to connect with her, even though they're not together. She doesn't know who her opponent is. She does the very ladylike thing of not asking Mr. Barris who her opponent is. She just says, okay, yeah, I'll collaborate. And that's it. Now, one of the twin sisters, okay, so they're not actually twin sisters. They look exactly alike. They look like twins. Everyone thinks they're twins, but they are not actually twins. No one knows who's older than who. It's like this ongoing mystery through the book. No, she never tells you. But one of them does die, and it's because that would have been me. I'm not even going to lie. I would have known something was wrong because they don't get sick. They don't break any bones. They haven't aged. So
what were their names again?
Tara and Lainey. Tara is the one that's just like, something's not right here. Like, I don't know what it is, but something's not right here. And every time I get close to an answer, it flees my brain, like as if I have amnesia. She talks to the man in the gray suit, who they call Alexander, because they had to give him a name. 10 minutes after she talks to him, she dies.
Right? You're too close to finding out the truth.
Kiko and Isabel have a relationship throughout the circus because Kiko knows Isabel is in love with Marco. And they talk about Tara's death and they're like, do you think it was an accident? She's like, no, do you? And she's like, no. And it makes you think that if any of one of them steps out of line, they're going to die. Because they know something else is going on here, but they don't exactly know what it is.
And the way that this is brought up in the story, you're in this whole magical world. Oh, wow. You've now forgotten that this is supposed to be a contest between the two magicians. So Aaron goes and writes this gorgeous world and you're like, oh, look at it. It's amazing. Meanwhile, in the background, she's like, this is what's really going on.
Point for me, Jessica admitted that it was a gorgeous, okay, Kendra, come on.
No point.
Jessica admitted this is a gorgeous world. Towards the end of the book, when it's very obvious that Marco is in love with Celia. I mean, if you didn't get that, I'm telling you now. Celia ends up going to a cafe and she sees Isabel there and they start talking a little bit because Celia knows that Isabel knows there's more going on in the circus. So apparently there's a lot of people knowing what's going on in the circus at this point. And Isabel reads her card for her. And it basically says that she has a lot of burdens on her. Celia ends up leaving. And when she takes her umbrella to leave, when she's out in the rain, she realizes that she's not getting wet. On her way there, she got drenched. So now on her way back to the circus, she realizes, hey, the rain's not hitting me. And she figures out that she has the wrong umbrella. Guess whose umbrella she has?
That's right. That's what the umbrella thing I was remembering.
Yes, she has Marco's umbrella. So he kind of creepily stalks after her and is like, I think you have my umbrella. And she immediately figures out this is who her opponent is. And she can't believe that she didn't figure it out sooner because he was always in the background. And she was like,
at like the midnight dinners or something.
Right. I would have been very impressed. And I'm like, touche. I would have never figured it out if you wouldn't have told me who you were. The love affair between Marco and Celia doesn't really start until another midnight dinner. He is very, very tricky because when he gets his umbrella back from her in Prague, he asked her out for a drink and she declined. When they come back around to London, they have another midnight dinner and she loses her scarf. Now, she does not do this on purpose. He actually steals her scarf to keep her in Chandrish's mansion. So she's looking for it. Everyone else leaves and he is literally just waiting by the door with her scarf in his hand. And once she finally gives up looking for it, he's there by the door and he's like, are you looking for this? And she's like, hardy, har, har, har. Because she knows exactly what he just did. And he takes her on the tour of the house. And I was always wondering, why are we taking a tour of this house? Like, I didn't understand. And then I realized, oh, this is a non-date. because this is an old times and you can't just ask somebody out on a date. And even if he would have asked, she probably would have declined because they're opponents, because she's smart.
Yep.
But this was their non-date for her to fall in love with him, because this whole time he's been in love with her. By the end of the night, when she's leaving, she tells him that she forgives him for stealing her shawl, and she ends up leaving it behind.
Scarf?
Well, technically her shawl. Shawl, scarf. To me, in the South, it is all the same.
And it's shawl.
Shawl. Now, the 13th year of the circus comes around, and they all go to Chandrish's house to celebrate. Apparently, Marco and Celia have been keeping in touch, so they are flirting with each other the entire night. The man in the gray suit tells him, you need to stop doing that, because he knows in the end, one of them has to die. They haven't told us this yet in the book, but I'm telling you now, one of them is going to die. So he's trying to warn him, can you please stop? Because she is your opponent. You need to focus on winning. And it fuels Marco to go into the ballroom, take Celia, dance with her, and kiss her, which I think that's their first kiss. Afterward, he makes everyone forget the memory except for Celia. Chandrish is the next person to go crazy. And he has been losing his memory, and he has basically lost himself since that first day that the bonfire went in flames.
Right? I mean, magic has to feed on something.
The man in the gray suit comes to the 13th party. They don't ever really say why the 13th party. Oh, you know why? Maybe because that's the bad luck. That's like the bad luck number.
Maybe. But sometimes people are like, no. It's just a powerful number. It can be whatever you make it.
I don't know. I think American hotels, they don't ever have a 13th floor. In the book, it says that they were going to have a big party at 10 years, but that everyone forgot it 10 years, so they made it at 13. But I think there's something with that number, but I don't know what it is. Ooh, maybe somebody can tell us. Widget notices that the man in the gray suit has no shadow. And this is what gets Chandrish's brain going, I guess is the thing. We haven't mentioned this yet, but Prospero, Hector, Celia's dad, he casts a spell on himself to make him go invisible. So he is in the book, but he's not allowed to talk to anybody in the book, like except for in the first couple of chapters when we first meet him. So he also goes and visits Chandrish and talks to him invisibly, which also I think makes him kind of go even more crazy, because he's like, wait, did that happen last night? Because Hector doesn't talk to him unless he's very drunk. So, I mean, that can mess with your head a lot. I mean, I talk to my dog, but that's not the same thing, I don't think.
When you're very drunk? Why are you getting very drunk?
Oh, no. I just talk to my dad. I talk to my dog on a regular basis, okay? Maybe that's worse.
Our dogs are home with us. That's who we talk to.
We didn't talk about this earlier, but the way they are bonded together, Marco and Celia, in order to keep them in this challenge, they have rings that they burned into their skin. And if you even think about leaving or trying to get out of the challenge, it burns throughout their whole body. And it is just horrifyingly painful to where they stop thinking about leaving the challenge. So it's not a choice. They can't just decide, hey, okay, let's stop and go off together and live in a cottage at the end of the world where nobody can find us. It's not going to happen. Now, Marco does break up with Isabel. He should have did it a long time ago, in my opinion. That was kind of just wrong. This is called leading on. If you don't know what that means, read this book, you'll figure it out. I didn't realize how powerful she was until he breaks up with her, and she pulls out this box that they never mention, and it has his bowler hat that he wears or used to wear all the time until apparently she stole it. It has a handkerchief, and she has knots tied all around it. And apparently, it was a big deal that she did this because it's been keeping the circus balanced, because the moment she undoes it, everyone kind of just falls over in pain. And I think really that was the whole point of the challenge, because the whole point of the challenge is endurance. How long can you keep this up until you basically die. And that is the challenge. That's the whole point of it. How much magic can you do before you die? So her knotted, whatever it was, I don't even know what to call it. It was keeping Marco and Celia's endurance together in order for them to keep the circus going. That is why it had lasted for so long. Because I think everyone that knew what was going on knew it was eventually going to break, but it didn't actually start breaking until she undid everything.
Had her temper tantrum. And no one knew that she had done this.
Kiko knew.
Oh, okay. All right. So the majority of them did not know that she had done this.
Had she not did that, I think the circus would have fell apart within like 5 years or...
Or it may not have been able to grow to the size that it was. All of those tents, it might have failed somewhere and they would have had to redirect their energy into doing something else.
After she undoes everything, Frederick Thiessen, the Revoir, he dies. Chandrish goes to the circus and he's told by an invisible man in his ear to follow the gray man in a suit. And the reason why the gray man in the suit goes is because Celia invited him, because she thought that if she invited him, he would be the one to end the challenge. This is the part where they find out that one of them has to die. And apparently the first one is Frederick, because Chandrish actually throws a knife at this man and kills him. So Celia, this is like her best friend, because she doesn't really get out a whole lot either. Losing him is like losing a best friend. And it's very sweet. Marco makes this tent that's called the Pool of Tears, and it's to give her a place where she can go grieve and cry in peace, not have to deal with people. Because remember, we said that she doesn't really leave the circus a whole lot. Her downtime is reading. Go figure, right? Okay.
You can magically transport your books in a Bookamabob. Find book sleeves from Bookamabob on Etsy.
Celia does find out that the reason why Frederick died is her father's fault, because he tells her. She finds out because her and Marco have a night together.
He offered her meat, didn't he?
Yeah. And she took that meat.
Happily.
So she finds out that he is the one that killed her friend, because he gave Chandrish the idea. Chandrish was off his rocker. He was not trying to kill Frederick. He was trying to kill the man in the gray suit because he had no shadow. Okay. So I don't know if that makes it any better, but there you have it. And after their night together, Celia takes the circus and she leaves. She goes to America, the farthest place she can think of to get away from Marco, because she knows now one of them has to die. He is just heartbroken. This man is lost. And guess what? You feel like Isabel did when you broke up with her. So karma does come around, bitch. No, I'm just kidding. And he goes and he visits her. And all this time, I did not know. I completely forgot. He had on this like mask that he put over his face that everybody else was seeing that she didn't like. He made himself look more handsome. And she's like, I know that's not what you really look like. He goes and he visits her and he confronts her. And he says, you wouldn't meet up with me after Frederick's funeral. You completely avoided me. Then you took the circus overseas. And she tells him, well, yeah. And she says, because this is not going to work. She knows it's not going to work. And she's like, I'm trying to make the circus self-sufficient. So when I go, these people still have a job. So they weren't just pulled in just because of a stupid game that my father and your parental person, I don't even know what to call him because he's not a parent. She tells him that she's planning to kill herself. And he's like, no. He's like, do you remember what you told me about your father and what he did to your mother? He's like, you're torturing me in the same way. And I'm like, oh God, that's so sad. It made me want to cry.
You're so cute.
And she tells him the meanest thing ever after he tells her that. And she's like, don't come back. Let's go back to the plot line with Bailey. At the age of 18, he has these couple fun nights with Poppet. And you already know he's in love with the girl. He's been in love with the girl since apparently he was like 7, 8 years old when he first saw her. Remember, Poppet can see the future. So She goes to him at his farm and she's like, I don't know why, but you have to come with us because the circus will not go on without you. We leave whenever we close. If you want to come, make sure you get there before that happens. Well, turns out that that night he does decide to leave and he does decide to run away at the circus. Problem with that is the circus already left without him. So he finds the Revoirs and they take him in. I wish this would have happened to me, okay? Because he just has, I'm telling you, all the freaking luck in the world. They take him in. They pay his way to New York because that's where they're going. They give him a room to sleep in. They make him a red scarf. They buy him a suit.
He's got the best entry into the whole, like, I'm running away to the circus. He got the golden road to it.
Right? So angry.
Kendra's tried to run away to the circus many times. Nobody gave her a red scarf, so she kept coming home.
Well, okay, so I would have ran away to the circus, but at the same time, I would have ran away from the circus because that's just too much poop. I can't.
They didn't have any animals in this circus. Oh, you were running to the wrong circus. That's why you didn't get your red scarf, and that's why you always came back home.
As he's going to New York, he says, I feel like one of those girls in the fairy tales, the ones who don't have shoes and then somehow get to attend a ball at the castle. That's because that's what it is, Bailey. That is what it is.
Right? You're getting the fairy tale life. And meanwhile, you still don't quite understand why this darn kid, with his occasional page or two long chapter things, is important. Why is he important?
Now we do find out who Kiko is. That's my nickname for her because I don't know if I'm saying her name right. Turns out that she was the last opponent that the man in the gray suit and Hector put against each other. And she was also connected to her opponent by some type of scar on her neck, which was, get this, 83 years ago. It's 83 or 82? It's 80 something. So she's known all along what's been happening here. Celia does ask her for help to keep the circus going because she's going to sacrifice herself. And she agrees. She's like, okay, we'll do this. Now, Marco does what Celia asks him to do. He goes back to London and he sees Isabel again. And she's like, well, I left the circus after reading this boy's cards. And she's like, it was the second time that I felt like I was reading for the circus and not a person. She's like, the first time was when I read Celia's cards. And then she tells him, I truly believe that you would have had a happy ending. She's like, but the timing was off. And then she pulls something out of her pocket and blows it into his face. And I'm like, oh my God, she's going to curse him. Woman spurned.
Right.
And he disappears. And you're like, whoa, what just? And it turns out that Kiko is the one that taught her that little trick. Because she needed Marco in New York with her in order to make her plan to keep the circus going. So it's all coming together, all the plot lines finally at the end. If you've ever seen that movie Crash, this is what's happening. Bailey does end up at the circus because the Revoirs are like, oh, we're here. Let's all go to the circus. Oh, it's closed, but it's not raining. And there was a giant boom. When Bailey hears all this weird information, he actually runs off to it because he's like, something's happened. I need to be there. So he goes. Kiko is the one that greets him and she takes him into a tent. And then it skips to Marco being pulled over there from Isabel. So he time warps to New York and Kiko's there and she's basically like, okay, we want to keep this circus going. In order for that to happen, you have to die. And he's like, okay, he just accepts his fate. If that means that Celia's gonna live, then he'll do it. And it's funny because whoever dies, you are dooming the other person to a life without you. So in a way, you're not doing anyone any favors.
The challenge would be over and done with. Kiko is obviously not still doing whatever hers was. It's not like, oh, well, now you died and now the circus can continue and oh, well, that person is heartbroken. The challenge is done.
Right. And the circus would fall apart, but they're trying to keep it to where the circus will keep going even after one dies because she magically energizes it, half of it, Celia, and then Marco energizes it with the bonfire. So that should tell you right there who would have won. Celia would not have won this challenge. There's no way. She would have, her endurance would have and it would have been over. Marco, his whole challenge was just coming up with a new tent because all of his magical power was in that bonfire. So he would have been fine for another 100 years, or at least that's my opinion of it. Fight me. No,
just kidding. I am fighting you.
Right before she makes Marco walk into the ball of bonfire flame, she tells Celia that he has to die in order to keep the circus going because it's his bonfire. And she's like, I know he'll do it for you because he loves you. I'm surrounded by love letters that you guys have been writing to each other for years. They're just in the form of tents. And I thought that was so pretty.
Oh, you're being cute again.
It was so pretty. Then I was like, oh. This was probably one of the first times that I was like, oh, don't die.
Kendra wants them all to die. So this is a big deal when she says, wait, now I don't want you to die.
So as he's like walking into the bonfire, Celia jumps into his arms because she is trying to do what her father did to himself, but only in a better way. Because remember, he made himself invisible, but he has to attach himself to things in life that he cared about, which is extremely hard for him because he didn't care about anything. She tries to do the same thing. So they become this ghost-like thing that is attached to the circus. Come to find out that in order for them to stay attached to the circus needs a caretaker. And neither one of them can now be the caretaker because they're like ghosts. That is where Bailey comes in. This tiny little boy that has like, I don't know, like 5, 6, 7 chapters in the whole book. He is the one that becomes the caretaker for the circus. But it's not like she makes him do it. Celia gives him a choice. He decides to do it. And I think Poppet is the reason why he decides to do it, which is just trickery because we all know women are tricky.
No, it comes back down to love.
Trickery love.
No, love is more powerful than a couple of old dodgy magicians who are trying to kill people just to prove one of them is better.
It's still trickery.
Love, fight me.
They now bind him with a burning ring. So my guess is that if he ever tries to leave the circus, it will not allow him to.
What's with the burning rings? I mean, you know, the ring of fire.
Johnny Cash, everyone. Now we're at the end of the book. Basically, what happens is once Celia and Marco are gone, but not gone, Poppet, Widget, and Bailey take over the circus. Poppet goes to Chandrish and makes him sign over the circus. And as soon as he does, she gives him a little kiss. And all of a sudden, his Chandrishness comes back to him. That's the only way I can describe it, his essence, because he was a very fun, can't get rid of all the ideas in his head kind of guy. And then all of a sudden he just went flat. His imagination was not going. So she doesn't give him back the memories, but she gives him back his essence for signing over the circus.
Or personality, maybe?
Personality, essence, Chandrishnish.
Now I'm like stuck on the Dark Crystal.
Essence!
Okay, so I watched Atypical last night, and it was the episode where he has to draw the penguin's essence, if anybody else watches that show. So I'm really stuck on the word essence right now. Then Widget goes to the man in the gray suit to get him to sign over his part of the circus, but I don't really think the man in the gray suit had anything to do with it. And he only agrees to do it if Widget will tell him a story. Widget is kind of like, oh, the only thing I really do is tell stories from what you give me from your past when I look at you. And the man in the gray suit is like, that is the best power. And he's like trying to convince him that, no, that's not just what you do. You give people life, the air they breathe.
Oh, God. Again, what kind of podcast is this? Oh, that was funny. This shows that these three kids, they're like so vital to just the continuing of the night circus. And where you just thought, oh no, you got a couple of unique children and then you've got this random Bailey kid. No, they're all so important. Breathing life into people.
That's how it ends. I want to know how the man in the gray suit got rid of his shadow. Like, is he just that old that his shadow was like, nope, I don't want to follow you anymore.
Maybe he tried the invisible spell like Hector, only it didn't work because he's not the greatest magician. It just made his shadow invisible. I mean, that's what it came down to. These two guys were like, no, I'm better. No, I'm better. We would like to thank our sponsor, Bookmabobs, on Etsy. They sell book sleeves, mug rugs, rice bags, and books signed by Kendra herself. Please review our podcast on iTunes and Facebook. You can follow us on Instagram at West Coast Booksters and on our personal bookish accounts at k.e.radke and at fondberries_book.
Now I don't know how we're going to ruffle their pages. I guess with an invisible man that's watching you. So are we going to ruffle their pages?
With a red scarf, a black and white tent, with magic. We're not rubbing invisible men on their pages. Oh, that's just awkward.
Okay.
I have way too many horrible, like, mental images on this.
Okay. I can't.
I know. I'm like, now that's just stuck. Ruffle their pages with an invisible. Whoa. And especially if you like all of the Invisible Man movies and books, quite often he's naked. Come on.
Oh, God. Today we ruffled your pages, not with an invisible man, because Jessica said not to say that, but I said it anyway. Until next time.